From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 258 with guest Rory McCaw, recorded Tuesday, March 20th, 2012. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the show on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and I'm doing Run As Radio again. Glad you could be with us. Today, my guest is Rory McCaw. Been on the show before. He's a principal consultant at InFront Consulting Group, a Microsoft Gold Certified Partner based in Toronto, Ontario, and is the author of a number of technical books going all the way back to MOM 2005. Welcome back, Rory.
Thank you very much, Richard. Pleasure to be here.
So what are you working on these days?
What are we working on these days? That's a great question. A lot of it has to do with the pending release of System Center 2012.
Mm-hmm. And the suite's only getting bigger.
It is. Well, bigger and smaller, depending on your perspective. I mean, Microsoft has made a number of acquisitions, and not all of those are translating into individual products in the suite, but our bits and pieces are being taken out of those acquisitions and bundled in to other products, and some exist on their own.
When you are coming into an organization that is maybe just growing out and considering, you know, how do we get more serious about management, what's the sort of starter product? What's the thing that gets people hooked on System Center?
Right now, or at least looking back, this may change going forward with 2012, but I think historically it's been either one of Configuration Manager or Operations Manager. Mm-hmm. And what really drives that decision is the group within the enterprise that is looking to accomplish some level of management. So traditionally on the desktop side, we see folks look at Configuration Manager because it helps with, say, Windows 7 deployments,
right,
even XP deployments, and then the management of those. And then on the server side, although you can use Config Manager, most people are more interested and have a higher priority aligned with the actual management and monitoring of those systems, and that's where Operations Manager comes into play.
Isn't that interesting? Because I do find organizations are like that. Are you desktop-centric? Are you server-centric as an IT org?
Right. And especially when you get into the larger companies. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a divide between desktop and server. But as you scale down to more mid-market, oftentimes those groups, they're still different teams, but they're often in a single group.
Sure. Yeah. Same guys. But, you know, who's struggling more? Because I've seen awesome work done in sort of mid-sized organizations around Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, which is free.
Okay.
And can manage an awful lot of configuration work for you if you can take the time to learn to use it right.
Correct. Correct. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges is as you scale down into those more mid-market enterprises, everybody is so focused on putting out fires and dealing with the issues of the day.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't have the time to dedicate to picking up new technologies and investing in, say, even internal proof of concepts to demonstrate how efficiencies could be achieved going forward.
Right. This is that, quoting Stephen Covey, this is quadrant two stuff, right? This is your preventative, you know, getting yourself out of the daily crises by starting to build up infrastructure that makes the fewer panics. But, you know, you could lay that at the feet of Operations Manager too. You know, how many times have you had a disaster that after you cleaned it up, you went back and looked at the logs and saw clearly in the logs, we've had 2 months of warning that this disaster was coming. We just weren't looking at it.
Yeah, no, it's very true. And I think a lot of that seems to be one of the biggest challenges that we get asked about from existing customers of Operations Manager. And that is, it's a great tool, but I can't find what's really relevant to me because of all of the other information.
Mm-hmm.
And when we can work with them and show them how to use the views to really segment and filter that information, as well as implement just some common best practices in terms of management pack tuning, they can significantly reduce the alert volume.
I mean, that is the problem with OpsMan, right? When you turn it on, you just get buried.
You can, yeah, depending on the health of your environment, certainly, and how you turn it on, and the process that you followed to get to that point.
I guess, do you do the gain the other way? Do you dial it up so tight that nothing gets through and then slowly step it down so that the most critical things show up first?
That's one way to handle it. I don't know if it's necessarily the direction that a lot of customers take because mm-hmm. there's a fairly big time investment in doing that. But certainly rolling out agents to a subset of different server roles that are right. being monitored and then importing the management pack will give you quality information, but not in the same volume as if you'd rolled it out to all your agents.
Sure.
I think one of the biggest mistakes we see made in operations manager deployments comes down to the oftentimes the management and the PMs on the project wanting to show milestone completion. And one of their big metrics, which is more or less a false positive to the project success, is agent deployment. So right. have you deployed 10,000 agents? Well, yeah. whether you have or you haven't is really irrelevant. What information are you getting back, and is that information actionable, should really be the ongoing question in an operations manager deployment.
A far bigger thing. One well-instrumented server beats the heck out of 10,000, you know, noisy piles.
Exactly. And now, I mean, we're moving away from the 10,000 server environments mm-hmm. to maybe 40, 50 hosts with 20 VMs on each host.
Right.
So we might still have the same number of systems, but monitoring the host is also very important. And knowing that the majority of customers are still favoring VMware due to their early adoption, mm-hmm, monitoring that VM host and that hypervisor is critical as well. And that's where SCVMM and some of the third-party management packs from, say, Veeam, as one example, can come in and really provide you some great value.
So you do prefer SCVMM for instrumenting and managing VMware?
I wouldn't say we prefer it, mm-hmm. but I think that as we start to see organizations start to begin the evaluation process of Hyper-V, particularly on the 2008 R2, but even more so now with the 2012 platform, mm-hmm. I think that we're moving towards a more hybrid hypervisor type environment. And that provides a good interface into both platforms.
And is it actually going to be a hybrid environment? Are folks, if you're in VMware, do you stay in VMware? Or are they starting to live up Hyper-V instances?
We're starting to see companies introduce Hyper-V instances. I mm-hmm. mean, it's not across the board, and it certainly changes and varies company to company. But where we're seeing more and more Hyper-V is where there's the ability for cost efficiencies.
Right.
Development, test environments, things like that, where you don't need to be paying exorbitant license fees on the VMware side, and yeah. you already own the licenses on the Hyper-V side. Okay. And then workload specific in production.
Yeah, that makes sense to me that you would, you know, a certain set of workloads would stay in VMware and another set would end up in Hyper-V.
Exactly.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. And, yeah. and I guess the strength when it comes to System Center is the fact that all these different pieces play so nicely together.
The integration story there and the integration functionality beyond just the marketing story is actually very impressive. Mm-hmm. So looking at companies that have had incident management systems that they haven't been happy with for years, and there's been a lot of manual activities in getting information out of the monitoring system or the config management system into their ticketing system, mm-hmm. the integration with Service Manager is very straightforward, very easy to put into place through the native connectors, and then just through some fairly straightforward customizations in terms of change management or incident management, or now with 2012 service management templates, mm-hmm. you get a lot of great functionality and integration out of the box.
Yeah, that seems to be the sort of next stage. You start with, a lot of shops start with Config Manager, just managing deployments to the desktop, and get into Operations Manager for instrumenting the servers. And then SCVMM, it's so compelling on its own. If you're doing virtualization, you want that. So those three stand alone on their own really well. What do you do next? Because that's now we start to get this more interesting integration story. Is it Service Manager or Orchestrator? Where do you go next?
I think that question, or the answer to that question, comes down to where the client is at currently. Mm-hmm. So if the client has a third-party ticketing and incident management system, really a CMDB in place.
Right.
And they want to maintain that going forward, then I think Orchestrator is the next logical choice, because that becomes the bridge between ConfigMan and OpsMan and getting that information out of the system center technologies and into your third-party ticketing system.
Right.
On the other hand, if they don't have something that they're in love with, or if they are a greenfield type deployment, mm-hmm. or they're just not using anything, then Service Manager makes a logical addition and is a logical choice.
But there is this point now where you need some kind of ticketing system. And if you don't already have one, Service Man is what you've got to go with.
Right.
Okay. Do you see Service Man come up on its own? That folks do look at ServiceMan as, I want to start putting a ticketing system irrespective of the other pieces? I don't know that I've ever seen that.
I wouldn't say in version one that we've ever seen it either.
Yeah.
I think that it will come up more and more now with the new 2012 version because of the enhancements, particularly the ability to have service management functionality be native.
Mm-hmm. And what does it really mean to be native?
Well, so a couple of customers that we've done work with wanted to implement a level of service management to allow for, say, the automation of new employee onboarding
right.
type requests, new computer, new AD account, new group memberships.
Right.
That all had to be done through the change management piece or function within Service Manager 2010.
Okay.
Whereas now you can use the service management functionality in Service Manager 2012. And that comes with a little more flexibility in terms of what you get out of that natively.
More of a self-service approach?
It can be,
okay.
Yeah. It can be fully automated and driven through a web front end. And they've made significant enhancements in the user portal to make that a much more friendly experience to the end user or the employee within the organization.
How dependent is Service Manager on Orchestrator to do something like what you're describing, a full set of AD deploy to a machine instance, like that whole dynamic? Does that really need Orchestrator, or can Service Manager do it itself?
Well, with Service Manager 2012, you have the ability to import your Orchestrator runbooks
mm-hmm.
and then call those from an activity. So it certainly streamlines and makes the automation that much easier. Could you do it with Service Manager natively? I think the answer is yes, but it would involve either some custom scripting or custom coding to get to that same endpoint.
Right.
And it would likely require more time and more investment in things that would be custom to the organization.
Yeah, and I like the way that Orchestrator, well, I was a fan of Opalis anyway. I like the way it captures those workflows. It sort of keeps
yeah.
them organized.
Well, and how you can monitor Orchestrator with Operations Manager.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the other nice tie-in there.
Yeah, see what's being used, see what kind of failures you're getting. I mean, I haven't seen this nirvana yet, but I love the idea that we get into self-service for these kinds of things, and that our role in the IT space is monitoring, that I can catch a failure before the guy can even make a call to say this didn't work. I've been notified, and I'm ready to respond to him if he calls, or to call him and say, hey, I see you had a problem with this deployment. Let me help you.
It's true.
I just don't know that we're actually there yet.
I think we're getting a lot closer, and I think that's making a lot of people nervous at the same time about job security and what their role is now within the organization.
Yeah. You know, I want to get rid of the mundane work. You know, the provisioning of an AD, like, this is not a big deal. I'd rather deal with when there's a problem and start getting more of that. How do we get this more seamless, easier, better instrumented? There's so much insight waiting to be analyzed in what's going on inside these systems that we never seem to have time to do.
That's true. But not everyone has an aptitude for troubleshooting.
Yeah.
And it does require a different skill set and oftentimes a level of persistence that not everyone has.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But I have never felt like there was any IT org ever that was out of things to do.
No, that's true.
Yeah, there's always more.
That is
more.
Very true.
Like we, the more we can offload, the more we can do. You just get better and better and better.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
What have we talked about in the 2012 stack? I just wanted to run through all of them once and then maybe go back and dig into a few different things. Any other favorite bits? Data protection, DPM?
Data protection is still a product, in my opinion, that is a niche market type of application because it can't back up non-Microsoft workloads natively. It's still not really enterprise ready except in specific workload scenarios. Now, in those workload scenarios, whether it's SharePoint or Exchange, it does a great job, but it's hard to justify supporting multiple backup technologies in the same enterprise.
Yeah, yeah, that's very hard. So you end up with a third-party product that actually covers everything you need.
Yeah, exactly.
No other way to do it. Yeah. Endpoint protection?
We're seeing a definite interest in endpoint protection and also the MDOP suite. So whether it's AGPM for the management and policy-driven changes to group policies themselves or group policy objects, or whether it's MBAM for centralized management of BitLocker encryption across mostly client systems, we're seeing a lot of interest in that area as well.
Yeah, the encryption problem is an interesting one, especially with this bring your own machine to work thing. Like the iPad is becoming the bane of my existence in trying to control endpoints.
Yes, that is a challenge. But I think that's where another piece of MDOP comes in, and that's the AppV component. So we've done a fair bit of work in the last 12 months with different law firms, and it seems like they were early adopters of bring your own device to work. And because a lot of those lawyers are partners, they have an increased say in what gets done and what needs to be supported from an IT perspective. So we're seeing with the use of the Citrix components tied into ConfigMan and AppV and application sequencing and that whole bundle, you now have a lot of agility in terms of being able to move from a traditional desktop to an iPad and maintain the same level of experience.
Right. The answer is just don't put anything on the iPad. Keep everything at home.
Well, and with the law firms, we're finding that the way they manage documents, it's all integrated into their office suite of tools anyway. So there's no data that they can actually take with them unless they print something when they leave the office.
Right.
They want to be doing billable work. They need to have a connection.
Yeah. Yeah, we are so utterly... Have you noticed how boring computers are today if you don't have any bandwidth?
It's true. True.
It used to be computers were boring if you didn't have any electricity. Now you have to have an internet connection to actually do anything.
It definitely improves the experience.
Yeah, it's just an interesting limitation. This section of Run As Radio is sponsored by Secret Server, the password management software for IT admins. Secret Server helps you manage local admin passwords and service accounts the right way. Get your free 30-day trial for Secret Server at runasradio.com/secret-server. I'm looking through the stack of System Center 2012, and I think the only other product we haven't mentioned in this is App Controller.
Yes.
So what's App Controller and why do we care?
You know, that's a great question, and I really haven't spent a lot of time in the App Controller space. So I don't want to mislead you in any way. I'm going to defer answering that. Because I don't have enough information on it myself.
It is a new product, so you still try to figure out how this actually fits into the equation. It's only been, 6 months or so since the thing's really sort of popped up. And as I understand it, I certainly don't declare myself an expert in the space here. This is really about bridging the cloud into the System Center space properly, and it's just in early days yet. And in fact, that's a whole other discussion angle around the System Center suite, is how it's going to relate to more and more of our operations running in the cloud, either public or private, as well as our own hardware.
Well, I think, I'm a little sick and tired of the whole cloud itself. The marketing lingo hasn't really lived up to anything tangible in my mind. Mm-hmm. But if we look at what the cloud is defined as, which, to my understanding, and everyone seems to have a bit of a different opinion, it's a managed virtualized infrastructure that has the ability to scale up and scale down in its most basic form.
Some concept of elasticity.
Exactly, exactly. And I think a lot of customers are there today. They have management and deployment tools in place. They have virtualization throughout their organization. And although the scale up and scale down may not be as automated as the cloud marketing materials want you to believe it can be, I think they're pretty close.
No, and you've described it very well, because the actual experience of using Elasticity out on the public cloud is nowhere near as nice as the marketing materials is either.
Right, right.
But we got good internally at, you know, certain applications being very elastic.
Yeah.
And I think the System Center suite is a core set of tools to making that possible. You ConfigMan and OpsMan play a big role in creating a sense of elasticity that I can, be able to instrument a particular app in a farm that's reaching peak load and use ConfigMan to push different instances over to other machines and yank them into the farm. You know, we were playing a great game in one customer's environment where during the day, Exchange dominated this particular farm of machines because they were moving so much mail. But at night, the mail load dropped dramatically, and we'd pull those machines away and we'd push them over to OLAP cube processing, because that's okay. What was needed. At night, we were reprocessing massive cubes and then as much horsepower as we could lay our hands on. And you know, it was long before we stuck the cloud moniker on it, we were talking about this effective reuse of machines. And it was all about virtualization. It was all about instrumentation and constantly moving images around and lighting things up and pulling them down again.
Yeah. I think the other misconception with the cloud is when we hear that word elasticity, mm-hmm. it implies scaling up systems of a similar role quickly to provide scalability. So the example you gave with Exchange is a great one, but again, it's role specific.
Sure.
And in the enterprises that we do work in, and these are some of the largest enterprises globally, even in those companies, we don't see a huge requirement or demand to scale in and out in any at any rate of speed that's greater than a typical request sequence that would go through process approvals to get new hardware, be it physical or virtual.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's Hotmail that we're talking about and you've got 3,000 identical servers, then certainly that's a huge benefit. But when it's adding one more, two more Exchange servers, that can be something that customers are going to provision, deploy, and probably leave in deployment as opposed to pull them out anyway.
Absolutely. For the most part, you know, the hardware is just not that expensive, right? We provision for peak for a reason. The downtime's what's expensive.
Correct. And I think that's where we're going to start to see the other big shift is we've seen all of these customers start to evaluate and oftentimes purchase new central storage. And the cost of storage, although it's come down significantly on a per megabyte or gigabyte basis, mm-hmm. the cost of those units and the investments is quite large and significant.
Yeah.
Whereas what we're now seeing with Server 8 is the ability to either use SMB storage or to use local storage. And I think that's really going to be a game changer when we start to see some Server 8 deployments around virtualization.
It's, the dynamic between Server 8 and System Center 2012 is fascinating to me, because I see that 2012 is much closer to being done than Server 8 is. And I just don't know how well we're going to pick up all of these changes that are happening at Server 8. I am concerned.
Well, I think from a virtualization standpoint, I think it's going to do a lot more to level the playing field mm-hmm. between where Microsoft is today and where VMware is today.
I mean, they're pretty close. Even in 2008 R2, they're pretty close.
They are. Yeah, they're definitely getting closer. But there's still a lot of folks that where they're not close is in the learning curve, right? Mm-hmm. There's still a huge investment that companies need to make to transition skill sets over from VMware to Hyper-V.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There are differences in the approach. And I mean, the vSphere suite is pretty compelling. Like it's everything you need to know. It's a tight little package, and Hyper-V still a little loose.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Well, where do we drill into? I think the powerhouse grouping these days for System Center is ConfigMan, OpsMan, ServiceMan, Orchestrator. Like that to me is that
I would agree.
That real sense of we are doing preventative work here. We catch problems on the servers before they take things down. We're able to analyze our service problems and focus on, you know, what can we make easier for people. It's those pieces working together that seem to be the most compelling.
Yeah, definitely. And going back to one of your earlier questions about where do customers start? Mm-hmm. I mean, now moving forward, I think Orchestrator is a great starting point if you're looking at the suite itself and which technology to pick up, because we've been able to show customers some really significant and quick wins in automating what are traditionally very manual tasks. Mm-hmm. And a couple of examples of those are things as simple as Patch Tuesday comes along, we need to reboot, patch and reboot all of our servers, and we need to ensure that those systems come back up.
Right.
So right now, we're paying out hundreds of dollars a year, thousands of dollars a year, if not hundreds of thousands in overtime, to have somebody babysit a server restarting and making sure services come online. So
yeah.
Now by being able to automate that, we're going to see some significant savings there.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I've been the guy sitting there with RDP running, trying to connect to that server over and over again.
Yeah.
Waiting for it to come back.
Yeah, it's true.
It's a funny...
I think those days are numbered.
They really do have to go away.
They do.
It's not a good time. Not a good way to spend your time, that's for sure. Just pounding away on that piece. Yeah. We didn't talk about update services at all, but it really is a part and parcel with this whole suite of pushing updates and managing.
Definitely. You know, well, it's just the native integration now with Config Manager,
mm-hmm.
and the ability to integrate, even if you have an existing WSUS instance, into your software update point in ConfigMan, and then manage all of that and control it centrally, I think provides a huge amount of value. Patch management is something that now is just assumed every organization has,
mm-hmm.
and they have a process and strategy for it. But we're still finding that a lot of customers struggle with the tool that they have elected to use. And that could be true of ConfigMan as well, because there's a bit of a learning curve there and a lot of logs to look through when you run into an issue. But we still find point solutions out there for patch management. And these are with customers that already own tools like ConfigMan,
mm-hmm.
where they can take advantage of that. And that always bewilders me a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that Microsoft's made it easy, too. There's been so many different ways to get these things done. It's kind of tough to sort it out. And I appreciate that ConfigMan 2012, using MDT 2012 under the hood, using WSUS, like those are good things that I like it when free tools are used by pay tools, because it means the free tool won't go away and it will get better.
That's true.
And that yeah. makes me smile. Like, okay, it's worth betting on MDT, because you know now that ConfigMan's depending on it, it's not going away. It's only going to get better. You know, that's a good tool to use.
True. Very true.
Yeah. Exciting stuff. What do you see folks building in Orchestrator? Like, what's a sort of standard set of things they end up constructing?
It really, again, kind of comes down, I think, more or less to the industry more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Across industries, a lot of companies are interested in doing something for user onboarding and user offboarding.
Yeah.
So upon termination or leaving the organization. So that's one that's fairly common. Server reboot management we see as something that's quite common across industry verticals. But when you get into specific verticals, financial services an example, there's still a lot of financial services companies using either FTP or secure FTP to transfer files between different organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And they really don't have any confirmation that that's succeeded or failed.
Yeah.
So they're now looking at Orchestrator to manage those processes and provide either a level of alerting or the ability to remediate a failure if something errors out in a certain way based upon known conditions.
Yeah, I appreciate that thinking, that it's not just about creating a macro to cover a bunch of steps. It's about instrumenting that macro so you know what failed.
Right.
Yeah, that's a pretty important set of thinking around Orchestrator. And those get popped back to OpsMan primarily, or to Service Manager when you have failures?
Well, I guess they go to OpsMan initially, and mm-hmm. then they would be raised as an incident in Service Manager.
Right. And could kick off another orchestration. Heck, you don't know. You get into an interesting loop back there.
True. Yeah. I mean, OpsMan could certainly kick off a recovery
mm-hmm.
and resolve the issue. By itself, Orchestrator could actually kick off a recovery and still generate an alert.
Yeah.
But then the alert could be resolved once it succeeded with the follow-up process within Orchestrator.
Yeah, isn't that the best email to get? Hey, by the way, we had a failure here, but I retried this and this, and now it's done. I just thought you'd like to know.
Right.
Yeah, I like things that are fixed themselves. And I don't want to underestimate, I think the offboarding piece is a harder problem because, you know, an employee that's been around for a while ends up with a lot of stray accounts, and actually trying to capture all of that cleanup in one place, that's really hard.
No question. And determining whether the employees left. So I know we've done cleanups in the past where we've had to account for things like sabbatical leave or maternity, paternity leave, just overall health issues that have led to a long-term leave. There's a number of things that you don't know as an IT individual in an organization of thousands of people.
So, like putting an account into a dormant state rather than a removed state?
I think certainly disabling it is the first step, and then providing, and this is where you can start to benefit from some of those change management processes in Service Manager. You can send off a request or really an inquiry to HR saying, is Rory McCaw no longer with the organization? No, he's away on a 3-month personal leave.
Right, right. So we're going to want that account back. The other piece of offboarding that I think is a problem that doesn't surface early is what happens to mailboxes, what happens to SharePoint entries, what happens to files that that are allocated to that person. Like just having a path to where does this stuff go, who takes responsibility for it.
True. And it gets even more complicated potentially at the IT level when someone leaves, in that maybe the application that they've installed has dependencies on the account that they've used to install it, and they've used their own account.
Yeah.
I know we've seen that before at different customers.
Oh, and you take the account out, and now nobody has privileges to get to it. Like I ran across a situation, we had something like 200 mailboxes orphaned, no account ownership anymore, because their cleanup mechanism had taken out the accounts without cleaning out the mailboxes, and there was stuff in there that people wanted.
So automating that is definitely a challenge and maybe not worth the investment in the time it would take to identify all of the different options, but certainly automating some steps like the disabling of the account and then alerting the right people and getting approvals at different levels are things that could be facilitated through the different technologies in the System Center suite now.
And it strikes me that Orchestrator... that those processes evolve over time, that you'll build the initial version and you're going to miss some things, you're going to add more things. Like eventually it becomes this source of knowledge about an awful lot of the infrastructure you've got that probably is in nobody's head. You know, the buildup of an offboard script, just the number of different things to go look at. We really, after a year of tinkering with that and expanding it, all the other places that people go, that could be a fairly unique set of information. Did you know people could have accounts here and here and here and here and here? You know, I don't know that anybody would know all of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm excited about where System Center is going in this sort of combination because I'm really concerned about the institutional knowledge around infrastructure, that it's so much of this gets lost on a routine basis, both on the back end, you know, on our roles in IT, as well as the front end, people actually getting work done, you know, executing on the business. We end up being responsible for both those things, and I just don't think it's being captured well right now.
No, I would agree. It definitely differs company to company.
Yeah.
And the ability even to include architectural diagrams as references or UNC paths to where those are located in the different change requests for a project and that happened 2 years ago and then go back to be able to find where they are can be extremely beneficial as well.
Yeah, good record keeping around this stuff so that you have some chance to pick up that project and look at it. I mean, how many times have we had a service running somewhere and you're like, who's using that? Why is it there? You know, most of the time I find the only way I can find out if this thing matters is to shut it off and listen for the screams.
Right. Which is a common approach that a lot of companies take.
Remarkably effective. Not very polite, but effective.
No, and quite reactive, but nevertheless, it works.
Sometimes it takes a month for the screams to show up.
Well, and that's where hopefully you've P2V'd the box before you've actually reprovisioned the hardware.
Yeah. Or I found a few machines where it's like, you know, if we turn this one off, it won't turn back on again. When those bearings in that hard drive go cold, they will never turn again. We can reboot it. Don't let it shut down for 10 minutes or that will be the end. And thank goodness for P2V to get stuff off those machines.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, Rory, what's next for you? You're going to be heading out at any conferences? What about TechEd?
I'm not sure about TechEd right now. I have some slots that I've, some submissions I put in for speaking slots, mm-hmm. but I am going to be presenting at the Microsoft Management Summit coming up April 16th to 20th in Las Vegas.
Awesome. NMS?
Yeah.
Good show.
So that'll be fun. But sadly, I think it's the last year for MMS this year.
Yeah,
so.
they do seem to be reorganizing all the conferences for Microsoft, but maybe that it was time.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to see what it turns into.
They've done a great job with some of their conferences, so I hope that the exclusivity, if that's the right word, or the segmentation maybe is a better word, of the product suites doesn't fade when we get into a larger conference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great point. Well, thanks so much for talking to us. I appreciate your insights around System Center.
No, Richard, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
You bet. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.